Vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
So we're going to read. First of all, we'll read from Bhagavad Gita as it is. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We'll read from Chapter 2, Contents of the Gita Summarized, and we will read Text 64. Then, we'll read some verses from Chaitanya Charitamrita also, because today is the anniversary of one important pastime in the life of Lord Chaitanya and his very close associate Lord Nityananda and his other close associate Srila Raghunath Das Goswami. So we'll make reference to that also. But to start off with, we'll read from Bhagavad Gita chapter 2 verse 64. And I assume there's a questions sheet, and if you have any questions, you can write them down, and in a little while we'll try to answer any questions that you might have. So here Lord Krishna says, Raga Dvesha Vimuktaistu Vishayan Indriyaischaran Atma Vashyaya Videyatma Prasadam Adigachati. Translation. But a person free from all attachment and aversion and able to control his senses through regulative principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. Why don't we do this responsibly? You can repeat after me, okay? But a person.
Free from all
attachment
and aversion
and able to control his senses
through regulative principles of freedom
can obtain the complete mercy
of the Lord.
So it's a very nice verse, very important verse. We need that mercy in order to progress in our spiritual lives and in our lives in general. So this verse then is explaining how we can get that mercy, special mercy, from the Supreme Lord, and in that way we can advance. So I'll read the purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is already explained that one may externally control the senses by some artificial process, but unless the senses are engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord, there is every chance of a fall. Although the person in full Krishna consciousness may apparently be on the sensual platform, because of his being Krishna conscious, he has no attachment to sensual activities. The Krishna conscious person is concerned only with the satisfaction of Krishna and nothing else. Therefore, he is transcendental to all attachment and detachment. If Krishna wants, the devotee can do anything which is ordinarily undesirable. And if Krishna does not want, he shall not do that which he would have ordinarily done for his own satisfaction. Therefore, to act or not to act is within his control, because he acts only under the direction of Krishna. Sushinatai Gaura Hare.
This consciousness is the causeless mercy of the Lord, which the devotee can achieve in spite of his being attached to the sensual platform. I read the verse again. Raga dvesha vimuktais tu vishayan indriyais charan atma vashyaya videyatma prasadam arigachati. But a person free from all attachment and aversion and able to control his senses through regulative principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasani Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Well, you may have noticed we don't have good luck with microphone stands. Where am I going? It's either too high, too low, too humble, just going down. Are you suggesting now a human microphone stand? I should hold it. It's not going to work, is it? Is that the point? Oh well. Yes. Yes, so anyway. Sometimes people are a little concerned about our regulative principles. You know our regulative principles, I suppose. See, this is a heavy microphone. Ah, look, that's clever. Wow, you did it. That's amazing. It's magic. See if it stays there. Sometimes. Well, you know what our regulative principles are. Here, Lord Krishna is referring to them as regulative principles of freedom. These regulative principles we follow, I think most of you would know, but they are that we don't eat meat, fish or eggs, and we don't take any intoxicants, we don't engage in illicit sex life, and we don't engage in any gambling. There's a famous story which Prabhupada told us, well, a very well-known story, of when some of his contemporaries were trying to preach in England in the 1930s. So there they were, you know, the world was very different then from what it is now. Now it's much more liberal and anything goes type of atmosphere. But back in those days, much more narrow-minded generally and much more conservative and so on and so forth. So anyway, those devotees, just a few, maybe a couple or so of devotees, they were there in England trying to preach in the late 1930s, I think. So they met one man, the Marquess of Zetland. Means he's a member of the nobility of some sort, the British aristocracy. And he had previously been living in India. He had been part of the British administration of India, some important person actually, being, you know, a nobleman supposedly. So he was there in the British administration in India, a very prominent position. And he'd had some experience like that with Indian culture. So he knew that in Indian culture, in Indian society, it is very sort of stratified, you could say. They're very distinct, and even to this day, although a lot less, but it's still there. The sense of class, deeply ingrained, what to speak of 60 or 70 years ago, it was really even much more deeply ingrained, that you're a Brahmin, you're a laborer, a sudra, so there's a gulf, a world of difference. So anyway, this Marcus of Zetland, having had little experience there in India, he knew that in Indian society, the highest position, the highest class, is to be a Brahmin. Brahmin basically means, essentially means, priestly, academic, scholarly, and of high, refined character, like that intellectual type of person, of high character. So he knew that. So he asked the one devotee, in England they were, so he asked the one devotee that, is it possible for me to become a Brahmin? And the devotee, because in Krishna consciousness, we do not worry very much about people's births. Actually, we don't worry at all about people's births. And it's just a matter of what sort of person they are. That's all. A person may be of high birth, but of low character, or vice versa. These things, you know, birth is not really a very good rule of thumb to go by for understanding people. So in Krishna consciousness, our philosophy is like that, that we don't care about people's births, but we care about their consciousness. Yes, we care about what they're really like at heart. So, therefore, we certainly accept that a person who may be in terms of birth, not of a high birth, and even in terms of character, say at least in their earlier days, they may not be of high character, but if they are nicely trained, then they can become elevated and become first-class persons, regardless of their background, totally regardless of their background. They can become first-class persons, very cultured persons, and in other words, they can become Brahmins, priestly, intellectual, like this, spiritual persons. So the devotee then, that this Marcus of Zetland posed the question to, can I become a Brahmin? Can you help me to become a Brahmin? The devotee immediately said, yes, certainly, you can become a Brahmin. The first thing you have to do is give up meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex, and gambling. That's step number one. So just do that, and then come back and we'll go into step lesson number two. So the Marcus of Zetland was taken aback and shocked a bit even. And he said to the devotee that, what? Give up those things? I'd rather die. Yes. Very famous story. Famous story. Makes the point very nicely. Srila Prabhupada told us this story. Yeah. So, oops, excuse me. Yes, so, oftentimes people think, sometimes people ask us if they hear, when they hear, that we don't do those things. And they ask us, they become even sometimes a little concerned. Oh, are you all right? Or, what do you do? Do you do anything? As if, you know, you can see it just happening within their minds. That within their minds, as far as they're concerned, they think that these things are the essence of life. And if you can't do these things, you've lost the essence of life. If you lost the essence of life, well, you've had it, haven't you? You're just finished. You're finished. You might as well be dead. So that's what the man said. I'd rather die. So sometimes people, they may not be think it's quite as dramatic as that. But sometimes people, they become a little concerned that if I stop these things, then I will be restricting myself and confining myself. And in this way, I will be missing out on certain very important things. I'll be missing out. So my life will be, it'll be like I'm sort of in a prison even, you know, restricted and confined in that way. But here Lord Krishna says, these are the regulative principles of freedom. He doesn't say these are the regulative principles of confinement. The regulative principles to restrict you. The regulative principles to take away your pleasure and make life dull. No, he doesn't say that. These are the regulative principles. Regulative principles of freedom. It's very important. We have to meditate on this. Just a few verses before, actually verse 59, Lord Krishna made the point. Vishaya vinavartante niraharasideina rasavarjam rasopyasya param drishtva navartate. The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. Yes. So this is very relevant, very important, because those regulative principles, they are dealing with sense enjoyment. So Krishna says, a person may be restricted from that sense enjoyment, just like to give the example of the prison. Generally, if you're put in prison, then your situation is very much restricted. At least in, you know, of course nowadays, you know, from what I hear, a lot of these prisons, it's, some people prefer them to their homes. They have TV, they can watch any time, and the sort of company they like, and so on. They can educate them. Anyway, but traditionally, prison means you're restricted. You can't do. You can't go wherever you want. Go see your friends. Go here, go there. You have to sit in a little room. So, in this way, you can't drink. You can't eat what you want. You can't go and find some member of the opposite sex. So on and so forth. You're restricted from sense enjoyment. So Krishna, this is what, in a sense, the regulative principles are doing, obviously, no intoxication, no illicit sex, and so on. One is being restricted, but it is different from that situation where one is just being restricted and there is no alternative. Krishna says that you may be restricted, but the taste remains. So, therefore, people who are locked up in prison or somehow confined, like, for example, if you get a serious disease, then you're in hospital, you'll be restricted, your diet will be restricted, you won't be able to do very much at all. So, you're being restricted from sense enjoyment, but the taste remains within your heart. The attraction remains. The desires remain. So when you come out, you just go straight back to those same old activities. So that being restricted from those activities did not help you, because the taste remained. But Krishna says that if you cease these engagements through experiencing a higher taste, then you can become fixed in your detachment from those other activities of sense gratification. Yes. So our activities, our regulative principles, here Krishna is calling them the regulative principles of freedom. The idea is that if you control yourself by following those principles and then direct your energies into other activities. Activities of devotional service, activities of Krishna consciousness. Then, because now you're not giving your time and energy and so much attention and concentration to those activities of sense gratification, now you're putting your time and energy into your spiritual activities of devotional service. You're able to focus like that because now you're not engaged in those illicit activities. So, when you become fully engaged in those spiritual activities of devotional service without being interrupted by, oops, better smoke a cigarette. Oh, my favorite programs on TV. Oh, Kuch Kuch Hota Hai. Or something. Gosh, I'm sorry about that. I gotta stop talking about that. Oh, look. Ah, look at that. Member of the opposite sex. Ah, oh, very nice. Look at that motor car. Gee, that's just what I need. So, not being involved in all of that, but rather giving one's attention and energy to one's spiritual activities of devotional service to Krishna, then one is able to tune in fully to the spiritual platform. And spiritual platform means blissful life, a full consciousness. Yes. Very peaceful, very nice, very happy life. So one is able to become absorbed in that without being interrupted and interfered with by all these other desires and ideas and attractions and things taking over your attention, taking over your time, taking over your energy, and stopping you from focusing and becoming absorbed. Yes. So these activities, well, the principle is, Krishna mentions in that other verse we just read, that it's a matter of getting a higher taste. It's not just a matter of stopping. No more meat. No more intoxication. Just stopping, dead. Now there will be nothing. No. It is a matter of some alternative activity which gives a higher taste. Yes. So, the example which is given to illustrate the point is that if you have 100 rands, now if you have, say, 10 rands, if you have 10 rands, and I have 100 rands, and I come to you and I say, let us exchange, you'll be very happy. You'll be very happy to give up your 10 rands. Yes, you will not feel. You will not feel at all. At all. I'm losing my 10 rands. But rather you'll feel, I'm gaining 100 rands. Very good. So it'll all be completely positive. But if you have your 10 rands, and I have nothing, and I say, give me your 10 rands, then you'll think, oh, what? I have to give up my 10 rands? I don't want to do that. Yes. So it's a question of taste. It's a question of taste. The experience of pleasure. So, Krishna consciousness is like that though. If we can actually become absorbed on the spiritual platform, then we will experience a much higher taste than just these things like smoking cigarettes and so on and so forth. Yes, people cannot understand. People cannot understand. Srisinatai Gaura Hari Kita. People cannot understand that there can be a higher pleasure. People cannot understand that there can be a higher pleasure. They don't know anything else, so they think that these things are so important that actually there is a higher pleasure. One of our great acharyas, Yamunacharya, he said that, because in his younger days he was a king, actually. He was very wealthy, and he took advantage. He used his wealth and position for his enjoyment. Yes. In other words, he had whatever he wanted, and he made sure that he got it, and he could afford it, anything. So he was really like, kind of debauched, you could say. Yes, degraded into all types of sense gratification with the facility of his opulence and high position. But then he became a devotee, and actually became a very extraordinary devotee, Yamunacharya, one of the most prominent spiritual masters in our Vaishnav world. So he said, some people would be shocked and just bewildered to hear this, but he said that now that I'm tasting the pleasure of engaging in devotional service to the Lord, the ecstatic, amazing bliss of serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he said, when I think back to how I was and what I used to do, and, you know, I was so fascinated with all those things, but he said that now, when I think back, and he says particularly, when I think back to how I used to enjoy sex life with a woman, so compared to the taste that I'm getting from my spiritual life now, from Krishna consciousness now, he says that taste from that sexual activity is so insignificant and just sort of like pitiful, actually. He says, my lips curl in distaste, and I just spit at the thought. Yes. So that's advanced, very advanced. Not only is he detached and unaffected, but so much on the other side. And why? Why? Because of getting this higher taste. Yes. Because of getting a higher taste. It's a very practical thing. It is not just a matter of being very staunch, very renounced. We will give up the world and just not care or something. It is not a matter of that. It is simply a matter of experiencing a higher taste. So it's very natural, very natural, very simple, and very relevant to anyone. Because everyone is looking for pleasure. So if you can find some higher pleasure and some much higher pleasure, oh, of course, you would be simply foolish to not go for it. If it's just there, easily available, readily available for anyone, you'd simply be foolish. Yes. So, these regulative principles then, even though some people think that they are restricting us, they will stop us from experiencing pleasure, but actually Krishna is saying they're the regulative principles of freedom, because they will free you from all these activities which will otherwise interfere with your getting real pleasure and higher pleasure. They will keep you restricted. Those lower activities will keep you restricted in this world of very small pleasure, which isn't at all exciting, but you'll be kept down like that. So you should try and appreciate like this. This is the principle Prabhupada's explaining here in the purport, that the devotee's idea is surrender means, sometimes people ask us, what does it mean to surrender to Krishna? Well, there's one verse which explains the six principles of surrender. The first is to accept everything which is favorable for serving Krishna, for pleasing Krishna. Second is to reject anything which is not favorable for serving Krishna and pleasing Krishna. Yes. So, the more, in the purport here, Srila Prabhupada's making the point that the more we can develop this consciousness, that when we are pleasing Krishna. Second is to reject anything which is not favorable for serving Krishna and pleasing Krishna. Yes. So, the more, in the purport here, Srila Prabhupada's making the point that the more we can develop this consciousness, that when we look at any situation, then we look and we evaluate what is in it for Krishna here. Or, is there anything for Krishna? Can we do better for Krishna? Not, as is generally the case in material life, what is in it for me? Yes. Look after number one. Yeah, you know, Prabhupada made a really interesting point about language. You know, in Sanskrit grammar, they decline the verbs. In English, you know, we say, I am, you are, he or she or it is. We are, you are, they are. This is how we go. Sanskrit, it is. He, she or it is. You are, I am. Yes. They are, you are, we are. Now, do you get the idea? Yes. You see, in our culture, our glorious Western culture, we begin with me. I come first. But this Sanskrit culture, this Krishna conscious culture, Vedic culture, is much more, is much deeper. Yes. And much more civilized. It is not just me first, but we put others first. Yes. So it's like that. It's like that. It's actually like that. They decline from he, she, or it down to I, not I, not from I. Yes. So, in the purport here, Srila Prabhupada is saying, if we can achieve this consciousness, that when we look at a situation, we see, we are looking to see, is it favorable for serving Krishna? And then we come to some conclusion, will I involve myself in it or will I do something else? Yeah. This type of consciousness, Prabhupada says here, that I look in that way and then I respond in those terms of what is in it for Krishna, not what is in it for me. So that consciousness, if one has or can develop and become fixed in that type of attitude, this is the mercy of the Lord. And on that basis, one can become detached. On that basis, everything belongs to Krishna. We will use everything for Krishna. If a situation is favorable for pleasing Krishna, then that is very good for us. We will deal with that. If a situation is opposed to pleasing Krishna, then we will not deal with it. Even if normally we might think that it would be very nice for me, but no. If it's not favorable for serving Krishna, we won't accept it. So we can become fixed in that sort of consciousness. This is the mercy of the Lord, and in this way we can become detached from all these lower things which drag people down. I'll just give you an example that we were discussing the other day with a doctor how in South Africa the life expectancy, or say in other parts of the world, Western parts, America, Europe, particularly Australia, you know, the more affluent countries, the life expectancy is about 75 or so, approximately. 75 years, average life expectancy. Do you know what the average life expectancy is in South Africa? The new South Africa. It is 42. Well, I was told by some doctors it was 45. Maybe you're right. Maybe it's gone down. That was few months ago. Are you a doctor? Okay, a good guesser. So they told me it was 45. Yes. So by that standard, I should be dead. I'm living on borrowed time. So why? Why is it the hijackers? You know, is it? What is it? Oh, it's AIDS. Yes. Did you know 4.7 million South Africans are officially registered with the government as HIV positive? Not to speak of the others where, you know, they haven't registered or it hasn't come to that point yet, because it takes some years. You probably know a little bit about it. So that's already 10% of the entire population. There's only about 45 million of us or so, something like that. So that is a full 10% of the entire population. How's that? Gee whiz. Not doing so well, are we? So what is that? That means, with all due respect, illicit sex life. Let us just be very honest. It essentially means that. Of course, there are other ways of acquiring it, but that's the main way. So this illicit sex life, people are thinking, oh, good fun. Yes. You know, you see, the Indian culture is much more morally upright. Even today you go to India, it's much more morally upright than the Western world. It's totally different, although it's coming down. But now, the thing in India used to be, in the movie industry, all the movies were about Ram, or Krishna, or Hanuman, or Shiva, or Durga. The great majority. Someone, when I was in Bombay recently, I understand little Hindi, but very little. So I know what Kuch Kuch Hota Hai means. And someone said, yes, first Kuch Kuch Hota Hai, then Chori Chori Chupke Chupke. Because that's what's going on, you see. That's what's going on. Anyway, for those of you who are not Hindi speakers, I'm sorry. Maybe afterwards someone could translate, but I think it basically means you're being cheated. I think that's the bottom line, really. Something's happening, and what is it? It means you're just being cheated. Something like that. Quietly. Very nicely, you know, with a nice smile on the face. But same thing. So, yes. So now the Bollywood movie industry has degraded from Ram and Krishna and Hanuman and Durga and so on. Now it's all either boy meets girl, or if they ever want a variation, it's girl meets boy. We're just waiting for it to come to the level of boy meets boy, but they haven't caught up with the Western world that much yet. Fortunately. But don't worry, we're just waiting. They're working on it, I'm sure. Anyway, illicit sex life. That's what it means. You see the advertisements there? We were driving through Bombay. So many billboards, just an ocean of billboards. And so many of them, movie adverts. And one sweet-looking young lady, or sort of, you know, attractive young lady, Madhuri Dixit, or somebody, with some dashing young man, heroic young man. But what does it mean? Actually, it means illicit sex life. Yeah, but they're just not so blatant about it, because there's more morality. But actually it means that, when you get down to it. And that is where we got to the point of 4.7 million people with HIV positive. And the rest who haven't, you know, clocked in yet, but don't worry, they will. So this is illicit sex life I'm talking about. Generally people are very attached to the opposite sex. Yes. Of course, we have in Krishna consciousness the institution of Krishna conscious household life, married life, family life in Krishna consciousness. That is a valid, bona fide part of Krishna consciousness. And it's also, in a sense, like part of the foundation, if not the main part of the foundation, of the whole Krishna conscious social system. A stable family sort of institution, you could say, in general, throughout society. But that is something different from just the anything-goes ways of life in general in the materialistic society. So I'm just giving you that one example. You can apply it. You know, illicit sex life. People think, oh, very nice, very nice. Very nice. Fashion industry and cosmetics and all these things. It's all part of that. But then there's also the meat eating. Do you know how many chickens? Now you're a pretty good guesser. How many chickens are slaughtered every year? Give or take a few. Million or even billion. Take a guess, go on. Take a wild guess. Well, we've got figures. It's in one of our books. 210 billion. What's that? That's 40 times the human population. Yeah. Very violent. So, you know, if you're trying, we would like a peaceful society, wouldn't we? Wouldn't we like a peaceful society? It'd really be very nice. But if we are living, if one of the pillars of our whole way of life, the eating pillar, that's an important pillar, holding up our lives. So if one of the pillars of our existence is simply just like saturated with violence, incredible violence, and that is one of the main pillars of our existences. So tell me, how out of violence is peace going to come? You know, it's like saying, how out of an apple seed an orange tree will come. You know, it just doesn't work and it will never work. And it's a figment of the imagination. Or at least it's ignorance and foolishness if we can't recognize that. That we are living by violence every day. And we're so dull we don't even notice. You know, there's this fellow, have you heard of Ronald McDonald? But believe it or not, you know, not the current one, well, I'm not up on all these things, but one of the ones, they've probably had a number over the years, one of the Ronald McDonalds became a devotee. I'm completely serious. Full-on devotee, initiated devotee, and he went on a campaign against McDonald's. Yeah, but he told us that what really turned him off being Ronald McDonald was when they did the ad and he was the main character in it, where he came with the children and they picked the burgers from the hamburger tree and ate them. Yes. How nice. You just pick it off the tree. You know, relatively innocent. So that turned him off and he thought, wait a minute, I think I'm in the wrong field here. Yes, it's very violent. It's very violent. So how out of violence is peace going to come? Violence plus more violence equals peace. You got the right equation there? Not really. Or intoxication. First of all, if you analyze the word, it's very appropriate. Toxic. It's poisonous. And it's intoxication. You take it inside. So you poison yourself. And very nice. I got nicely poisoned today. And people die of it. When I was in my younger days, I was a great fan of poetry. There was one great Welsh poet called Dylan Thomas. You might have heard of him. Bob Dylan adopted his name from him. Yeah, he was also a big fan of Dylan Thomas. He died at the age of 32 from alcohol poisoning.
Yeah.
Died. So what does intoxication mean? It means here we are, relatively normal or so, and then we take something which makes us go a little crazy. Yes. You might be introverted, you know, very quiet and in anxiety about how you're doing and, you know, that sort of thing. But then, and of course, you know, you might have good reason to be, actually. But you take some intoxication and you think, oh, now I can do anything. Yes. I can talk to anyone. I can do anything. All your inhibitions go. And even the inhibitions which help you go. And all you know, you're acting in a crazy way. Yes. And so, intoxication, what is the value of it? Who, can you find one person in human society who dedicated themselves to taking intoxication and improved their lives? Or did not, you know, degrade their lives very much? Can you find such a person? Not really. You know, when I used to be a journalist. And once in, this is in New Zealand, once in Auckland in New Zealand, the beer tanker drivers went on strike. Oh, what a disaster. So the pubs started running out of beer. Then they started drinking all the other drinks and they ran out of them also. And I was a journalist on one of the main daily newspapers in the main city, and our crime reporter came and said that the police told him that the crime rate dropped by 90%. Before I was a devotee, I wasn't looking for something to, you know, prove Krishna consciousness or validate it. You know, it was just in a very ordinary, everyday situation. All right, so I'm just trying to make the point that if you were at the beginning then, when I was saying, you know, no meat eating and so on and so forth, if you were one of those people, maybe just a little like the Marquis of Zetland, maybe you weren't thinking that, ah, they want me to do this, I'll die. But maybe you were thinking, gee whiz, that sounds, you know, a bit of a challenge, maybe. But think a little more deeply. Yeah, think a little more deeply. These activities are degrading, very degrading, actually. But if we become engaged in devotional service, we engage our minds and our senses in the service of Krishna, then Krishna means the transcendental platform above this material platform. Those activities are spiritual activities, spiritual means, eternal, full of bliss and full of knowledge. So if we are engaged in these spiritual activities, then we will experience a much higher taste. A much higher taste. And then, to put the other things aside, it is not like it's a challenge, but like Krishna says here, regulative principles of freedom. You think, oh good, I got rid of that. I'm no longer being held back and restricted by that. But now I am free to engage in those activities which really give me satisfaction and pleasure. Yes. So this is a very important point. In this way we can get the mercy of the Lord. Get the mercy of the Lord. And that mercy can carry us through and take us higher and higher until finally we come into the personal association of the Lord directly. That is the goal, to develop our eternal relationship with Krishna. So, I'm just going to mention little something here about the occasion which is there today. It's the anniversary today of this occasion. The chipped rice and yogurt festival of Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami is one of the personal associates of Lord Chaitanya, who is the most recent incarnation of God. Yes, we know that there are other challengers for that, you know, post or honor of being the most recent incarnation of God. India is, I wouldn't say full of them, but it has plenty of people who would like to be accepted as, or their followers would like them to be accepted as, incarnations of God. There are many, many, many. North India, South India, East, West, they all have their share. In fact, there's quite a big competition. Prabhupada made the point that they are striving, competing with each other, to get followers. Yes, like any other business. They want to get established and defeat the competition. Of course, be successful. So, in any business, where there is competition, someone may become the big leader. Some others may kind of, you know, they're doing okay, they're getting by, but they're not big leaders, but they're still able to carry on. Some fail, isn't it? And they just go bankrupt. That's life. So Prabhupada said also in this field of being a successful so-called incarnation of God, Prabhupada made the point, some fail. Yes. So he said that in India, in some towns, you may find on every street corner an unemployed avatar. Yes. Trying to find success, but he can't make it. So if he can't make it, he'll probably just go get a job in the factory. Yes. So we don't want to go into, you know, some sort of polemic or something like that about who is or isn't an incarnation of God, but according to scripture, not just you or me or our relative or somebody, but according to scripture, the most recent incarnation is Lord Chaitanya, 500 years ago. So Raghunath Das Goswami was one of his close associates, and Lord Nityananda is also an incarnation of the Lord. Incarnation of Lord Balaram. So Raghunath Das, on this day, met Lord Nityananda in Bengal, Panihati. And Raghunath Das was from an exceptionally wealthy family. Just like multi-billionaire by our today's standards. Extremely wealthy. So, but he was very frustrated with that. It was not that he was happy, got so much money, more and more and more every day, and I'm just becoming happier and happier and happier every day as a result. No. You know, sometimes we give the example, when it comes to, you know, having a supply of material facilities, sometimes we make the point that if I have two rotis and you have 200 rotis for lunch, then if the idea is meant to be that the more material facility we have for enjoyment, that therefore proportionately the happier we become, but if I have two rotis and you have 200, you should be 100 times happier than me by the time you finish lunch and by the time I finish lunch. Yes, I think you get the idea. So, you know, if you try to eat 200 rotis, you may die. You may explode. Or you may just become extremely ill or something. But it is not that you'll be proportionately happier. We need a certain amount to maintain the body. We actually need it. And if we don't have that, we may feel dissatisfied and something is lacking. But that doesn't mean we need 200 rotis. You know, maybe two will do, or three or whatever, something like that, depending on your capacity. So this principle applies across the board. It's not just eating. It also applies to money and house. Things like this. That you require a house, but you don't require Buckingham Palace or something like that. You don't require that. And it's not that if you get it, that you are then going to be so much happier than you would be in your moderate house. No, no, no. So the point is that if we become excessive in our material existence, extravagant, then it's not that our pleasure increases and increases proportionately until we reach dizzying heights of happiness. Having consumed our 200 rotis, we're just bursting with happiness now. No, you become sick. Yes, so if you have too much of anything, if you get an extravagant situation with anything, then effectively you become sick. But you may not notice it. Yeah. When eating, you notice it very obviously. Yes. So like this, material extravagance, material excess, leads to spiritual sickness. And even material sickness for that matter. Yes. So Raghunath Das, anyway, he was fantastically wealthy. Many times more wealthy than all of us put together. Many times more than all of us put together. But he was also very intelligent. And he could see clearly that this is not giving me happiness. So therefore, he took to spiritual life. But his parents and family members and everyone, they just were very discouraging, you could say. They wanted him to be, you know, very responsible, maintain the family fortune and carry on the family tradition and all that. And forget about the spiritual life, who needs it? You know, and just buy whatever you want, so just stick with that approach. But no, he knew through experience that this is not the way to become happy. So he wanted to take to spiritual life more and more. So one time Lord Nityananda came, an incarnation of Lord Balaram, associate of Lord Chaitanya. He came and Raghunath Das came out and met him. And Lord Nityananda could see here is a very sincere person. He really wants to advance. So, what he did, Lord Nityananda was there with a great entourage, great, great many devotees. He called, and Lord Nityananda, he's also like a very humorous person. So Lord Nityananda said, all right, you're so wealthy, you want to do some service and be a devotee, so all right, you can sponsor a feast. You can sponsor a feast, you know, for thousands. He was there with thousands of people, Lord Nityananda. You can sponsor a feast of chipped rice and yogurt. Now you might be sitting there thinking, what? What is chipped rice? How do you have a feast of chipped rice and yogurt? Chipped rice is, I think in Hindi or Gujarati they call it pawa. Pawa. It's like squashed rice. Flat. So, and you know what they do with chipped rice, flat rice, and yogurt in India? It is the classic medicine for diarrhea. It is not some opulent feast preparation. But Lord Nityananda, being a very humorous type of person, he said, let us have a feast of chipped rice and yogurt. And for variation, we will have also chipped rice with milk. Condensed milk, kind of like thickened milk. And this will be our feast. So, Raghunath Das arranged that for thousands of people. And he was very happy, very jolly, when the local merchants heard
that there's a big chipped rice and yogurt and milk festival. They came with chipped rice and yogurt to sell. So Raghunath Das bought it all.